We are recording.
All right, we good to go? All right, good evening and welcome. I'm John Sheehan, President of the Delaware State Board of Education, and I call the February 19th regular meeting to order. It is 5:01 p.m. The meeting is open to the public in the Townsend Building and electronically via Zoom. The State Board of Education published the public meeting notice and meeting information on February 10th on the state public meeting calendar. Thank you for your patience if we run into any technology issues as we simultaneously conduct this meeting in person and electronically. Today's agenda contains two opportunities for public comment. There is time allotted for regulations and then for general public comment near the end of the meeting. Sign-up sheets are available on the table by the door. If you did not previously sign up to provide public comment via email and are logged in through the meeting URL, please type your name, organization, and comment topic in the chat box now. If you've joined through the call-in option and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in online through the meeting URL. As required by statute, this meeting is being recorded, and the recording will be available on our webpage within 7 business days of this meeting. When we're voting on items for action, I will ask all those in favor say aye, and we will only do a roll call vote if there is dissent. Also, as a reminder, when speaking or making a motion, please state your name. So we'll move on to roll call. Ms. Lalani, please do a roll call of the members of the Delaware State Board of Education.
Dr. Griffin?
Present.
Mr. Gunter?
Present.
Mr. Sheehan?
Present.
Mr. Simmons?
Present.
Ms. Stevens?
Present.
Dr. Szabo?
Present.
We have the cards.
Okay, of course. I will also note that we have the board's executive secretary, Cindy Martin. We have Deputy Attorney General Alex Corbin and State Board of Education staff, Kathleen Smith and Princess Lalani participating in today's meeting. Move on to the approval of the agenda. The board's agenda was posted on February 10th and amended on February 11th. Ms. Smith, are there any changes to the agenda?
No.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting as presented?
Simmons, so moved.
Motion by Mr. Simmons. Is there a second?
Griffin, second.
Second by Dr. Griffin. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. We'll move on to the approval of the January 15th regular meeting minutes. Due to extenuating circumstances, we do not have a quorum of members who are present at this meeting who are present at the January 15th regular meeting. And though it is procedure of the state board to have minutes approved by members who were present for discussion, we'll make an exception this evening. The January 15th planning meeting minutes were provided to the board for review in advance of this meeting. Are there any additions or deletions? Okay, is there a motion to approve the January 15th regular meeting minutes as presented?
So moved, Stevens.
Motion by Vice President Stevens. Is there a second?
Simmons, second.
Seconded by Mr. Simmons. Discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Next up, we're going to move to presentations. The first item, I just wanted to say how excited I am and grateful I am for this opportunity to serve. I am grateful to Governor Meyer and to the State Senate and to everyone who reached out. I'm excited to work with this board, excited to work on behalf of the children of our state, and really look forward to partnering with each and every one of you. We will move to presentations. Item B, the Reading Consortium redistricting plan update. This evening, we have Senator Tizzy Lachman and Representative Namdi Chukwocha to present information on the Reading Consortium.
Thank you. Can you hear us okay? Well, welcome, President Sheehan, and good to see you, be here with you guys in person for your first meeting and for your, I don't know how many meetings the rest of you have been at, but it's nice to be with you. So what we have tonight is really a process update. If you listened in to the meeting that we had for our full body last week, you will definitely note similarity. But I'll just start it off by saying, we had a very busy fourth quarter of last year, you may have noticed. And we found it very productive. We got a lot of stakeholder feedback. And of course, on December 16th, after some delay in the process we had mapped out for selecting a model for redistricting from which to draft a plan, we were able to make that decision It was a pretty intense meeting, but I'm really proud of the work that the consortium has done to reach this point, and really opted for a pretty big and bold choice. So for us, what that has meant in a lot of ways is that we wanted to recalibrate a little bit, to assess our capacity as a consortium to do justice to the model that was selected and make sure that we're able to draft a plan that meets the standards that you and the state board would expect us to meet, that we ourselves, the consortium, would, and obviously also will pass muster with the General Assembly. So we immediately sort of looked inward at our structures and even just like our research and engagement capacity and thought we're going to need to shore this up. So that's really what we've been spending this last, 6 weeks or so on doing. While I know that our most recently published timeline had that time probably looking more at having a plan draft to present to you all, we've instead been just making sure we have all the pieces in place to really robustly engage in this process in all of the ways that we know has to be done, not just the analysis, but also, you know, making sure that everyone who wants to have a voice in this process and needs to have a voice in this process, whether they know it yet or not, is fully engaged and there are not any surprises as we go through the steps to having a fully, fully developed plan. So I'm just going to walk through a little bit of where that brought us. We presented this to our full body last week for their feedback, and then we expect on March 3rd to have another full body meeting to affirm these structures. So what you're seeing is really kind of like the draft structure. I don't have anything to advance, but we can advance that slide, whoever has the power to do so. I've got a remote. Yay, thank you. Thank you. So I can go ahead and go to that next slide. So actually, the one gets that one. So we have an existing structure that we've been operating with, which has primarily been, you know, our co-chairs overseeing. We've had many standing committees in the past, but currently focused on the redistricting project, as I sometimes refer to it. We have subcommittees that were established in the interim plan that we adopted in May of 2024 and then enhanced, I think it was in July of 2025. So that has the subcommittees that are focused on specific stipulations. And that's our operational impact subcommittee, our fiscal impact subcommittee, and our community engagement subcommittee. We have since had a fourth subcommittee come and do some work and then sunset, and that one has been focused on discretionary recommendations that we might make. And so as we have co-chairs who have overseen this work up into this time, and what we are suggesting that we do moving forward is that we're going to establish an executive committee of folks who are involved as members of either the consortium or those subcommittees. Probably a 5 to 7 person. We haven't named those individuals yet, but meant to be more nimble and work, you know, with the appropriate urgency to provide, you know, coordination over top of those subcommittees, and just really keep things moving at the clip that we would like that it to move. We also have decided to begin the work of developing an advisory committee because we think there are a lot of groups that we want to make sure have inputs, whether that's, you know, I think the business community has been one example that's been used, but I'm sure there's many others. We could say there that we wouldn't want to put on a committee and make it really large, but to make sure that there's some leaders of a variety of different stakeholder groups there. We already have this to some extent represented in our community engagement subcommittee, but there's an educators advisory group and things like that. But this one would function a little bit differently. And next slide. So then we will continue to work with the Institute for Public Administration and DSU as our essential staff support and management. But we have also decided that it's very important that we retain an independent research and consulting firm to do the bulk of the highly technical work of drafting this plan fully. And so we've been working on that. That's taken a few weeks longer, as it always does, to finalize that. So we can't speak too specifically, but that will be an open thing that we'll be discussing by our March 3rd meeting, who will we be working with to do that and what that will look like. We are also looking at retaining some additional vendors, both for support of that executive committee, and also in making sure that we are doing as much as we possibly can in communicating effectively across the board. We know now that I think we've always seen our audience being quite broad, and now more people know about what we're doing. So we've got a little bit more ears than we used to, but there are still folks out there who don't know what we're working on, and we want everyone to know, and we want everyone to be contributing to the vision. Because we think that's the opportunity that this project provides and that we're very excited about. So on that next slide, you'll see it just speak to looking at potentially retaining vendors for communications and community engagement. All of this comes, of course, from funds that we've been working from over the past 18 months, and we still have those to work from. So that's what some of our structural adjustments look like. I think the pace of the work will start to pick up in March, and we'll have much more to come. But Representative Chukwuocha?
I'll just add to the beautiful overviews that we're really looking forward to engaging the full community. I mean, all of Newcastle County, Northern Newcastle County in this dialogue. And as we begin to work toward each of the subcommittees addressing the 13 stipulations to ensure that the community it understands and all of the stakeholders are being given the opportunity to not only hear about the plan as it's developed, but as it's being developed, that their voices will be included. So that's very important in having the not only the advisory group, but also the executive committee really working with the chairs of our subcommittees to ensure that's going forward along with those who will be helping us to develop the plan. So we are excited about where we are. And I know a lot of some may not have expected, many of us didn't expect that this is where we are. But in terms of equity and fairness, I think that that's really where how we ended up here. We landed here through to the quest of all of our membership, really thinking about the way in which we could have a more equitable system and that could truly help push us forward to having better outcomes for our students.
And I forgot to point out that we one of the decisions that we did make about the executive committee was that Representative Chukwuocha would chair it. And, you know, he's been our key leader on this redistricting adventure all along. And so it's most appropriate appointment, and we'll see who else ends up stepping up for that role. But I agree with you. I think we did surprise even ourselves a little bit, but not, you know, very pleasantly, but only in a surprise that we actually did it. I would say it wasn't a surprise from the 18 months of conversations and consultations we had within the experts in our subcommittees and the consortium, and the public facing conversations we were having. You know, everything was pointing us in this direction. It was really just a question of whether or not we were going to have the guts to do it. And I'm very proud that we did.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you being here. Questions, comments from the board?
I've got a question and a comment. First, the comment. I'm so glad to hear you're looking to engage a vendor for communication. I had the opportunity to attend the education town hall that Mike Smith and Kim Williams held a couple of weeks ago up in Newcastle. And I have to admit, I was somewhat surprised that there weren't more questions about the Reading Consortium plan or the process. I anticipated there would be. And so I think it just emphasizes, I think, again, that there are still many people that aren't aware of what's going on. And if they don't happen to follow what's in Delaware Online or, you know, any of the other media outlets, then they may not know. So thank you for that. My question for you is, do you have a target date set in mind that you'd like to see the plan developed by?
Oh, boy. Excellent question. We're kind of trying to learn our lesson and putting specific dates on the calendar because we've whiffed it a couple times now. I think we're trying to say we're trying to work expeditiously, but not over hastily. We understand the project that we've undertaken, and we absolutely want to do justice to it. So I, you know, We really wanted to get something to Dover before the end of session, and we're going to continue to work on a pace to attempt that. But I think as our vendor comes online and we start to see the work, that'll tell the story of how quickly we'll be able to work.
Thank you.
Other questions? Do you have time?
I do. Sorry, I do. You spoke briefly to the community engagement subcommittees, as well as having business leaders and as well as teachers being engaged throughout this process. My question is more so, is the primary stakeholder in all of this being engaged? The students. Of course, at the pleasure and consent of the legislator, there was a student member added to this board to be able to be here for the voice of our students. There was also a student member added to the Public Education Funding Commission, which I also serve. Is there an intention of the consortium to add student members to these committees or to these subcommittees? And if so, how many? And as well as where will they be selected from primarily?
Thank you for asking that question. You can certainly speak more to that as well. But the first thing I would say is thank you for that feedback. I think it's something that's come up frequently. We have not looked so far at putting students necessarily on the consortium itself. We have to do that by legislation, but we have a little more flexibility on our subcommittees. The way we've approached this so far in our work is when we had the landscape analysis done with the American Institutes for Research. What they did was specifically do participatory action research with students to help us get a better understanding of what the current landscape of challenges look like. And so we have absolutely worked in a very intentional way to represent the youth perspective to inform the work that we're doing so far. That's something we want to continue to do. I don't have any numbers or very specific outlines of what that could look like, but Rep. Chukwuma, what did you?
No, that's exactly where I was going to lead the conversation in terms of our work with the impact and the study that was done with AIR and the way we brought youth in. But to think that that same voice can to be utilized within each of our subcommittees and working with the youth, it could be school-based, community-based, but ensuring that the youth are aware of the plan, understand the plan, how it impacts them and their role in helping to develop it.
Yeah, definitely an important constituency for our advisory committee as well as the work.
And that actually leads to my second question, which you briefly touched on as well. Of course, as a student member, I have the opportunity to engage with students from across our state and in particular within their schools. One of the most common things that I'm hearing from students as it relates to the consortium is it's not understood what this means. When I speak with students about the consortium, I hear, am I moving schools next year? Am I getting switched around? What's happening with this? And I'm explaining as a student member that this is not happening right now. This may not even happen this year or next year. However, it's my question, is there a plan to formally or properly educate students about what is happening within their district? These are four large districts, over 40,000 students that are going to be affected by this. Is there a proper plan to inform them of how this change is going to be made, but also how it affects them individually?
Definitely. I mean, that's part of where the community engagement and the communications vendor is intended to help us with. So we're definitely looking for feedback on ways to engage folks who are particularly good at reaching young people and utilizing platforms that reach them. So if you have any advice for us, we would happily take it. But that's a big part of why we're looking to retain like someone with a dedicated skill set in communication and community engagement so that we can make sure that we have student ambassadors, perhaps something like that, that we can be working with.
And I think also being key to ensure that each one of the impacted districts, they really are partners. And for us to utilize that partnership as a way to reach the students within those districts. I mean, hands-on, I represent Red Clay and Brandywine. So it's my community, it's my civic associations, it's having meetings right there in our community so that the youth are able to attend and participate.
But that misconception about some like things happening like a flip of a switch is a very common one that we have attempted to dispel, but we're, misinformation travels faster than real information sometimes.
Other questions on the board?
One statement that I think goes to what Tyler asked, and then a question. If I'm correct, one of the 13 parts of the plan has to be that students will be allowed to stay in their current schools if they desire, with the funds going to to that district for them. The second, well, the question would be, is it safe for me to assume then as a board member that there is no date certain when it will be coming from Reading to us and our 3-month calendar then begin?
At this time, no, we don't have a date certain. I think in their last timeline that we put out there, we said February, didn't we? Didn't we? February, March. So yeah, no, it's not going to be February for sure.
No, I'd rather it be done diligently than rushed. So thank you.
I guess I'll follow up on the same timeline question. Given the sense of urgency without it being an emergency and getting a plan that may or may not get to the General Assembly by the end of session, what would be the process if it happens after session? Is it a special session? Is it go to the next when you come back in the session, or do you not know? I mean,
I don't think we've had those conversations.
Yeah,
we welcome the input. I'll say honestly that when it's completed, we will be prepared to present it. And I mean, that's as honest as we can say. And if it works our way here and before session or after session, we're going to be in a position to be ready to share it to the board and to our assembly, the General Assembly in both chambers, to make sure everyone's aware, I mean, immediately. So I wouldn't be my hope that we would sit on it, but that we would try to advance it at least in the ways that we can when it's immediately available.
Yeah, I mean, we feel like we ended 2025 with momentum, and we are, you know, very hopeful not to squander that and keep that momentum going. So I think, you know, these coming weeks of work are going to be as much about plan drafting but also about those outward facing conversations, whether that's with the community and all of the different groups who need to be better informed and educated about our process, also about our rationale for doing this work. And one of the audiences that needs to be part of those conversations are also our fellow legislators. So my hope is that as people understand our process and our goals more, that they will also become as excited about, you know, the vision as we are, so that momentum, you know, could accelerate things at any time. So we're really just trying to stay focused on delivering a quality work product here, and staying open to, you know, keeping this moving quickly so that we could end up at the finish line as we closer to when we had intended, but, you know, just being mindful as we go, trying to build support, understanding, and appreciation for the vision that we have of an equitable, a new and more equitable school district configuration.
So there is no, as I read Title 14, there really isn't the time constraints, the whole notion of bringing it to us in February and then having it to the General Assembly for this session. That's not in Title 14. You guys,
no.
Those are all kind of self-imposed deadlines.
Yes,
that you have.
Exactly. There's no date when our ability to do this.
Right.
And
so this work is the work of the consortium until it is completed.
Exactly. Correct. Exactly.
I like the term deliberately better than quickly.
Right.
Just quickly can make people think we're trying to rush it. And it's very clear, at least to me, to this point, that rushing is the last thing you're attending
to.
Right.
Right. But we don't want people to think like the lights are going out for any period of time. They absolutely are not. We are everything's happening. And that'll be evident, I think, as we move through March with more and more meetings coming onto the calendar and opportunities for people to plug in to our process.
Questions on the board? I would just finish by saying I've followed the work very closely since the creation of the consortium, so I don't have any questions. I just really appreciate you both coming here and keeping the board up to date, and, you know, to the extent you're willing, as often as you're willing, we'd love to have updates, but appreciate you very much coming down and hope to see you again soon.
Very excited to do
this
work. There's a lot of good stuff happening in education, and we're happy to be a part of that work.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda, we have a charter school update for information. We have Leroy Travers, director of the charter school office, here this evening to provide updates on the work in the charter school office. Mr. Travers, thank you for your written report. any further updates to share with the board?
First of all, just welcome Mr. Sheehan. Our office works closely in collaboration with the State Board on many different areas, and we look forward to that continued partnership. Some updates since our last meeting, an update on the Bryan Allen Stevenson School of Excellence. We have since our last meeting, we've had one public hearing in which some family members of the school joined and were able to provide comment about the school. The recording of that public hearing can be found on our website. I believe you have a link in the report. As of this week, we did have our final Charter School Accountability Committee meeting. The Charter School Accountability Committee met with the school for approximately 3+ hours, and at the end of that meeting, did vote to recommend a charter revocation for that school. That vote is a recommendation to Secretary Martin. Next month at this board meeting, Secretary Martin will give her decision to the State Board and ask for your assent to her decision. So assuming there may be questions around that, I'm open to questions. Just bearing in mind, I can provide facts, data, et cetera, but anything opinion related, that would go to your representative. Thank you, Ms. Stevens, to your representative on the Charter School Accountability Committee, which is Deb Stevens.
Questions to the board?
I do have one question.
Sure.
Leroy, how long is the record open? It was explained in the meeting that the only information that can be considered is information that's on the record. Does the record stay open until after the second public hearing, or is the record officially closed since the recommendation was made?
Yeah, so I think what you may be asking is if additional data comes in, et cetera, can that be considered? So we really consider the record to close. It's not in code. We consider it to be closed once the public comment time closes. I don't have that date right in front of me, and I apologize.
Is that the date?
So March 9th. It really just closes with public comment. With that being said, the secretary can really utilize any information available to her to make a decision. But let me confer with Carla, and perhaps we can get a specific date. It's not spelled out in code. Just code simply says you make your decision on the record.
On the record.
Yeah.
Other board questions? I have a few on it. Is it my understanding that this was the board's district, the Charter School Accountability or CSAC, their decision was based on enrollment numbers? Is that, are you able to share, is that the general reason for the vote?
So I would say enrollment, a low enrollment, which brings about questions about financial viability and questions about organizational and academic supports based on the financial viability that is caused by a low enrollment. Does that make sense? Kind of a domino effect.
Okay.
If you can, and maybe you can, because I know when the presentations were made leading up to their initial charter, that there seemed to be a lot of excitement in the community about the school. You said that there were some community members who came to speak. Were they speaking in favor of giving them a chance, or was there something they were pointing to that kind of swayed the committee's decision?
Sure. This is public. It's on our website, so I think I can speak to that, but I don't have an exact number. We had roughly 20 families. That's a rough estimate. You can go back and record it. All but one spoke in favor of. And the one that didn't, I guess I should say, and again, this is on the recording, the one that did it just said, this is our experience, and they gave it to the children.
I think that was a parent, I believe, of a gifted child who felt that the school wasn't challenging their child enough, but that, you know, most other parents were extremely passionate
about the school.
Many parents speaking of how their sons or daughters were bullied in previous schools, and now they've come to a school where they feel safe. I was surprised at the proportion of parents who identified their children as being autistic. It seems like they have a substantial number of autistic students at that school. And again, they felt that the small size of the school readily accommodated the learning needs of their sons and daughters as a result. And so they were very, very passionate about the school and wanting to see the school remain open. But the unfortunate thing was, and this came out in the CSAC meeting the other day, that they started at over 200 students when the school initially opened in September of 2024. And by January, we're down to 156. And by this September, they were down to 123. And then by the time they were put on review, they were down to 119. And so the question of economic viability was raised of, you know, what's the tipping point? How many do you need to be viable? And they identified the number 125, and yet they only have 33 commitments
for next year.
For next year. So
they have 33 applications.
Or applications, yeah. So it, you know, it becomes a question of, will they be able to reach a viable 125 students to economically keep that school open?
So that would lead me to another question, and I'm curious. I've been on a charter school board that ran into a similar problem and was closed. I know that it's possible to kind of give them some steps to mediate the issue. This seems like CSAC quickly made the decision that it's best to close this. Well, I don't want to say quickly, but made the decision soon after the decision by this board for them to be on formal review. The review turned up to say, let's close now. Was there thought given to kind of giving them some, we need to see some improvement in your commitments next year by X, kind of like we've seen for other schools, to kind of mediate the problem? Or did we just believe that it was too far gone and better for the students who are there now to say that this will be the last year?
So I can't really speak for CSAC, but I can point to, again, what's on the record. And
yeah.
What's
and I'll ask our representative if she'll try to give some color from your standpoint. I don't want to put you in a bad
position. One fact
that's
important to remember is that if you do those things, if you put those conditions on school and they don't meet those conditions, that does not mean that they close. That means we start this process over again. It's been a three-month process. So if they're given those conditions, whether it be enrollment targets, financial targets, and they don't meet them by May, June, then we start this process over, and which could result in a closure, but not until July or August. And I think that was pointed out during the meeting, the timing of things and ensuring, I think Stevens brought up the ensuring that staff members are able to find jobs, and another member discussed parents and allowing parents ample runway to find a
short
school or something.
Sure. Well, makes sense.
And it's my understanding is that there was a delay in their opening. Were they, when that happened, were they given certain targets that then were not met? And so that led to this next step?
They actually applied to us to delay their opening.
Okay.
And due to some enrollment, they wanted to boost their enrollment and their financial outlook. So they delayed opening for 1 year. They were placed under formal review before opening because they hadn't met their enrollment targets. During that formal review, they did meet their enrollment targets. We were able to open with 208 students in 2024.
Other questions from the board? All right.
Could I just end on some good news? Because that's a heavy, that's heavy news. In April, my report, you may or may not remember this, my report highlighted some students from the charter school of Wilmington who had entered a the Samsung's 15th annual Solve for Tomorrow competition. And they had a product called AquaGel, which was an artificial intelligence powered smart bandage that featured sensors, 3D printed components that monitored wound healing in real time.
Wow.
So they were, so when I reported on that in April, they were one of 10 finalists. And they actually won that competition,
wow,
which is amazing. And not only did they win, one of their students, Arya Anil Kumar, was selected to serve as the Samsung Solve for Tomorrow ambassador in Milan, to present the AquaGel hydrogel smart bandage. Just a little update on something I presented in April that was just an update from the charter schools.
Thank you for ending.
Sure.
Sure.
Excellent.
Any questions on that?
We'll move on to the next agenda item, regulations, professional standards board regulations for discussion or action. Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, Executive Director of the Professional Standards Board, will review one regulation for action. Dr. Bradshaw.
Regulation 1525, intern permit, is before you tonight. This is part of the House Bill 97 implementation. This permit is for anyone who is completing a clinical experience for a license in who is working in Delaware schools. And it was published on January 1st. Gotta remember all my months. January 1st, it received no comments. I just want to say that I have been working on and convened a number of stakeholder meetings with our higher ed partners to make sure that we know exactly how to operationalize the new permit, et cetera, et cetera. So we are on board for this, although this could be finalized if published in April, it would be finalized. It doesn't go into effect until the next school year, but it will allow us to get all of our ducks in a row to make sure that the permits can be issued this spring for people who are doing their clinical experiences in the fall. Are there any other questions? And welcome, President Sheehan.
Hey, it's great to see you, Dr. Bradshaw. No questions? All right, hearing none, is there a motion regarding Regulation 1525?
Stevens, I move that we accept Regulation 1525 as written.
Motion by Vice President Stevens to accept Regulation 1525 as written. Is there a second?
Simmons, second.
Second by Mr. Simmons. Any discussion? Right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bradshaw. Next up, item B, Delaware Department of Education, regulations for discussion or action. Rosie Morales, Education Associate for School Climate and Discipline, will review one Delaware Department of Education regulation for information. Ms. Morales, welcome.
Thank you. So Regulation 612 is before you, and so this is, it was reviewed and updated really in compliance with Delaware Code, requiring it to be reviewed every 4 years. And so the proposed amendments update and clarify the statewide requirements for public schools related to the possession, use, or distribution of drugs and alcohol. And so the revisions that I made really modernized the language. They align the definitions with current Delaware law and address marijuana related products, and then clarify policy and reporting expectations. I can break out some more changes by section, but I'll leave it as an overview for now. And if you have any questions, please let me know.
Questions from the board? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good evening. Next on the agenda, item C, public comment on regulations. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comment on regulations. Ms. Smith, do we have anyone signed up for public comment on regulations?
We do not.
All right. We will move on to item 5, state board business. First, we'll have a legislative update. During legislative session, we have this item on our agenda to give board members an opportunity to ask questions or raise discussion about education-related bills. We have Donna Harris Aikens, Associate Secretary for Government and External Affairs, to provide information. Welcome.
Thank you. And good evening.
Good evening.
So you have the, hopefully, you have the report in front of you with the current list. I checked the pre-files today. There was another list that came out today. There was nothing related to education. So this is the current as of today with everything that has been introduced or taken action upon. And since the last time we were here, I think the only adjustment was that the Senate Education Committee had a hearing and reported out one of their bills. And so I also included at the request of the leadership of this board a chart. So in the future, you'll be seeing the chart, not the narrative form. Hopefully that'll make it a little easier for everybody to keep track of not only bills, but the status. So happy to take any feedback or if you have any questions.
Questions for Donna?
Just a comment. I love the chart. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we are on to executive director's report. So our executive director will provide an update on her work to support the board priorities since the last meeting.
Oh, great. Thank you. You have my written report, and I included a bad photograph of the three awards that we will bestow upon the three past board members. But I also wanted to say welcome, President Sheehan.
Anything else? Any questions? All right, we'll move on to item C, committee and meeting reports. In a moment, we'll have the opportunity for discussion on board priorities, but first there was an opportunity for members to provide information in written reports made available on eBoard on any events or committee meetings attended since the last meeting. Would anyone like to share anything further?
I guess I can highlight a few of the things. I did attend this past month the student improvement component phase 4 mid-year review meeting. That has been a long process, taking a look at the teacher evaluation system and specifically component 4. And it seems that the process being phased in has had some real benefits. The survey that had been sent out to educators that piloted this new process indicated that teachers were favorable, but they did have some suggestions. And I listed the suggestions in my report so that they'd like to see a little bit more coaching around setting the goals for component 4. They would like to see examples of goals that are specifically tailored to the job that they are doing. Because many times you get generic goals that are given as examples. And if you're a school nurse or another specialist, it doesn't become evident what your goals should look like. And they'd also like to have people within the district trained on the process, meaning administrators trained on the process, so that for a lot of the questions and guidance that's needed, they would be available directly in the district to be able to provide that. I'm not going to read to you the NASB High School Transformation Network meeting, but you can see what was discussed. It was an interesting meeting in that the primary topic was, do we do away with transcripts that we currently are using to move to a competency-based transcript? And if you were going to move to that, how would you make it equivalent to what is currently being used so that colleges could make their determinations of whether or not to accept you? I've listed some states that are currently piloting some efforts. And one of the states indicated that they've got an agreement with colleges within their state that if you have mastered a certain number of skills, you automatically get accepted into those institutions. And so a lot of interesting work going on. And again, more and more opportunity that NASB provides to us to learn a little bit more about what's new and innovative in the area of education. I've given you a report on what happened at the Education Town Hall. One final thing that I'd love to focus on, though, it has been my participation as one of four selection committee members on the Superstars in Education, Higher Education grouping. Seeing what's going on here in Delaware, we've been doing site visits this week, just really excites me to see the good things that are happening in higher ed, the cutting edge programs that are out there. For example, today, we went to a site. I can't disclose the site because, again, I can't let you know who's being considered a finalist, but their project was on AI, which has been a primary topic here in the state. And just to see what this institution was doing to provide both instruction and encouragement around AI and link it to the workplace was remarkable, absolutely remarkable. So I would encourage any of you that if you have an interest, and they always need volunteers, to become a volunteer next year for the Superstars in Education Selections Committee. It's quite a process. And I've enjoyed it. So
excellent.
That's all for me.
I had the good fortune to join Vice President Stevens at the Education Town Hall and just wanted to go on record thanking Representative Williams and Representative Smith for pulling that together. It was a great turnout, full house.
Full house.
Yeah, and just a great opportunity to hear from members of the public, educators, what's on their minds. A lot of conversation about the Writing Consortium, about the Innovation Center. I really appreciate that opportunity for us to go and listen. And I also wanted to just flag, I'm going to hopefully start doing some school visits. And so we can share those with board members who want to join. Hopefully we keep it kind of like lean so we don't have a whole crew of people going into classrooms, but we'd love company in those. And any other? Yes.
I would like the opportunity to go. You have my report in front of you as presented on eBoard. But briefly to go over the events of this month that I have been able to participate in. Yesterday, me and Vice President Stevens took a visit to Howard High School of Technology, where I hosted one of my student forums once again. That was truly an amazing opportunity to be in that building and be at that school with those students in particular. One of the things that we try to do when I go to my forums is to have diverse groups of students. I don't want just the, you know, high achieving leaders that are going to tell me the great things about the world. I want to hear from students that are not interested maybe in policy, maybe they're just the student that goes to school because they have to go to school. And I think the conversations that we had yesterday were truly remarkable. We spoke about career and technical education programming. We spoke about school climate and mental wellness, yeah, student leadership and advocacy opportunities, and areas for growth and improvement within the school. Now, one thing that I can say is going into that meeting, a lot of the students were not excited. By the time we left, though, every single student was excited about advocating for the things that they can accomplish within their school. And I told our executive director, you will see some members of that school apply for my position when I leave. I saw some really excited students yesterday. So that was very fun. A little bit to the work that I've been doing in the month previous. Earlier this month, I participated in the Business and Finance Pathway Redesign meeting. Those pathways are being redesigned for the first time in 20 years. Last time they were looked at and revised was 2002. So I am proud to be participating in that with our educational associates on how we can make that pathway both engaging, but also, of course, more educational and have opportunities for our students that reflect the current time. And then moving forward to Career and Technical Education Month, that, of course, is a priority for us as a board, Career and Technical Education. I had the opportunity to participate in two different conferences this month, the Delaware Business Professionals of America, as well as the Delaware DECA state conferences. Now, I'm proud to say, after leaving the conference today, I won the first place in human resource management. So I will be traveling with our delegations to Atlanta for DECA, and for BPA will be headed to Nashville for internationals and nationals. So I am really excited about all of the work that our working group is doing with that. And I would like to give a special shout out to our Department of Education Director of Career and Technical Education, Dr. Wickard, and his amazing educational associates who have been putting on these conferences for thousands of students across the state of Delaware. If you have not had the opportunity to attend one of these, I highly, highly recommend that you do. These are truly amazing opportunities to see our students participating in their pathways, but exploring their passions beyond the classroom and in an actual competition area. And to those students that will be participating in conferences in the next few months, I wish you the best of luck, as well as those representing our state at the national level. I wish you the best of luck. Delaware is a powerhouse when it comes to career and technical education organizations. Last year alone in Business Professionals of America, 175 first place winners nationally. We are a state that does not come to play with anything when it comes to these competitions. So I'm excited for what's to come in the future with that. And then everybody's favorite topic, Public Education Funding Commission. We'll be meeting next month to go over our February meeting. I know there was an update presented to the state legislator earlier this month, I believe, detailing the final funding formula that has been proposed as we approach the April deadline and presentation to the General Assembly.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that.
Just a quick follow up.
To see who's going to follow up that. Well, you're afraid.
Listen. No, thank you, Tyler. Just a quick follow up to the presentation from Reading. Obviously, I would normally have a presentation around Reading, but I'm in those meetings with a different hat. And so, but I think what we oftentimes forget about that parlay to that is the Wilmington Learning Collaborative. That's part of that discussion. And so the city of Wilmington, which includes mayor's office, city council, the Wilmington Center on Education, Equity and Policy, the WLC, and I feel like I'm forgetting somebody else, but all of us have been meeting. Oh, and the Office of Educational Advocacy, Dr. O's new position from the council, we've been meeting to make sure that the messaging is streamlined. So someone doesn't go to one of those groups and say what's going on and they can't speak to what the other four are doing. For the first time, at least in my educational experience as a professional, I feel like there's a group who are coming to wrap their arms around the city of Wilmington. I think it's a good thing. So
awesome. And I think as the Reading plan plays out and as Senator Lockman and Representative Chupo just said, this could take a while to children in classrooms every day. And so I'm grateful that that partnership is happening.
Yeah.
Anything else from board members in committee and meeting reports? All right, move on to priorities discussion. Each regular meeting agenda will have specific presentations and or discussions aligned with our five board priorities, plus opportunity for discussion on initiatives. After discussion with Vice President Stevens, I would certainly like to reactivate our work around strategic planning and creating a strategic plan for the board. I know that this was started and then with the anticipation of Reading potentially coming earlier was put on hold. So I would love to reactivate that, but certainly want the board's feedback before we move forward on anything.
I would only say that I think that this board diving into the work of strategic planning for our work is paramount. It really ought to come before whatever Reading would bring to us, only because I think our position informs how we move forward. I'll continue to say that state code gives us as a board quite a bit of autonomy in the work that we do. And while we look forward to the inputs we get from all the stakeholders in education, ours is a unique role as a citizens board and kind of codifying that in a strategic plan is important.
Totally agree.
I guess my question slash comment would be, what's our next steps in terms of, I know we had started a process of choosing a vendor to help us with our strategic planning. Are we considering revisiting that? Is that just like, what are the next steps with that? Because I think if in fact we've gone through that process and we're looking for a vendor, then let's finalize that so that we can get the process.
Yeah. My understanding is there were proposals submitted, and
Yes.
yeah, and so I would, if we've already kind of done that legwork, I would suggest we use the proposals that are submitted, but curious if folks
We
have
never voted. We did. There were. We didn't vote on a selection, but there were proposals.
This is Griffin, just so everybody knows that I'm speaking for myself. It's probably a good thing we didn't vote, at least as it pertains to the vote that would have come from me. While I think that all of the proposals kind of spoke to what they would be offering, this board, by way of helping us get there, I really did not see the value from what they, at least in their proposals, said that we were going to be getting. It's still our work product, and I absolutely understand someone coming in and helping us organize our thoughts. But a lot of the things that the proposals were saying they were going to do is already publicly available information. We're going to go out and kind of survey stakeholders. We're going to go out and find this information. Well, we at Reading and everybody else has done that. That work has been done in the state of Delaware multiple times. And while we may not, as individual board members, have the capacity to go out and recreate that work ourselves, I'm just not sure that the juice, which is the final product, is worth the squeeze, which was the cost that they were kind of asking us to pay for the work that they were doing. I was looking more for someone who was saying, we're going to come in and actually help this board, because I talk as much as anybody in here. So this board, we can kind of start pontificating and get off task of this is what we're trying to do. That's what I was looking for more of in a facilitator of us doing the process, rather than we're going to go and then give you 10,000 more pages of information that now all of the geeks on the board get to read and kind of muddy the waters. I think that we have nailed down what our priorities are. I think all we're at the point now where we need to say as a board, so what will it look like as we engage our work based on these priorities we've made? So that's where I stood on. We
Yeah, but
never
I
had the
think to that
conversation.
point, the question is when we're going out to RFP, then do we need to ask of a different question for
Oh, no doubt.
these RFPs? Like, if that's like to me, if we were able to get to a better place around this strategic plan, we would already be there. So therefore, we it sounds like, and again, I've only been here, I think I've got my year. I think I've been here a year. Yeah, I've been here. In my first year, I keep hearing the same conversation. And it's like being on a treadmill. And so to me, I don't see that we have the capacity when our board, I think we have some great ideas, but I don't think we have the capacity to put them together. And so are we asking the right questions of those people's proposals to help us get to the place where you're hoping
Yeah, I
to?
don't disagree with you. In fact, I think we're saying the same thing. If we are going to engage an outside consultant, that's what we need to engage them on so that we don't keep having the same conversations over and over again about what we think is important and the need for a strategic plan. I just don't want them to give me a bunch of word salad in a proposal saying, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. Isn't that great? Wonderful. Well, what we need you to do is X. We have these ideas. We want to make sure that we can put them together in a way that's understood by us and our constituency, and that it's put together in such a way that it drives the work we do outside of approving recommendations that are coming from boards and other bodies that are given to us by Title 14. So I don't disagree that if we had the capacity to do it, it would be done. I'm just not sure that as I read the proposal that came back, that what I read was going to get us to where we needed to be. Sounded good. I mean, if I was an academic, that's the way I'd write a proposal, but.
Well, and I think that's the problem. I mean, Kathleen and I had the benefit of actually speaking with each of these groups. We interviewed them and gave them an idea of what to include in their proposals, but made it very clear that we needed to have, first and foremost, a conversation around what is our role? Because I don't necessarily believe that everybody around the table at that point that we initiated the conversation all had the same vision of what our role was on the State Board of Education. And even though it's included in statute, you're right, we do have a degree of autonomy there. And so I think for the very first step, understanding what we see as our role, number one. And number two, Jim, you said the word capacity. What is our capacity to do the work that we're envisioning? I jokingly said earlier today, I've got the luxury of going to buildings and a lot of meetings because I don't work. I'm retired. But not every single board member has that same luxury.
Yeah.
You've got jobs. And so also having that capacity discussion as well to start doing exactly, Meredith, what you want to see, building those priorities into a concrete plan that's going to list what our goals are for each item, what activities we're attaching, what we're setting as benchmarks, and who's going to do the work, how much is it going to cost us, and what does success look like? And some of the people that we interviewed had a better track record of getting us there. For example, when I take a look at PGM, they had a very, very flexible suggestion to us. They would go out and speak to stakeholders only if we wanted that. We did not have to include that. And that's what attracted me. They were very flexible. And yet I know we've worked DOE with PGM in the past. They've done a lot of work here in Delaware. They understand Delaware education. And so I felt they had a better handle, a bit more longevity. The group from Delaware State was a relatively new group. They had just, you know, been established, what was it, the year before. And so they didn't have the longevity I saw with PGM. And then the University of Delaware, I think, was the third group. And, you know, again, we didn't feel they offered us necessarily the same flexibility that PGM had included in their proposal. In terms of cost, I'll be perfectly honest with you. That's what consultants are getting.
I have no doubt. Yeah, my argument is not with the cost. It costs what it costs. My pushback was against what we were getting. I did not feel, as I was reading it, I was not privy to the interviews. I didn't feel that what they were offering us was actually going to
get
us where we needed to be in the time. I think we're further down the road than many of us believe. That's just me. Title 14, it tells us what we're supposed to be doing. Our role is in state code. I think part of any consultant's role to me, first and foremost, would be if there are divergent opinions around this table about what our role is, then they become as familiar with Title 14 as we should be. And the first however many sessions are so that we as a board can come to a consensus of this is what the title says, this is how we intend to interpret it for our work. Because now we're all starting with the same lexicon and we can move forward from there. Because if we have divergent views on what we ought to be doing, we're never going to come to the same understanding of these priorities and what they look like in our role as a board. And then to me, I also believe that, and I've said this in other meetings, and then I'll decrease so that somebody else can increase. I said, I think that our biggest asset are our voices, whether in this room as a board or as we are doing the work we're doing in other places. Again, people think we got a lot more power than we do to kind of move the needle. That's not our role in any grave ways, apart from redistricting that happens. What I guess this will be the second time in my lifetime that it's happened in the state of Delaware. So apart from that, I think that's the part I'm looking for us in the conversations we've had in the past. How do we leverage that? How do we leverage things like the access we have to documentary films that we can take throughout the state and support literacy and reading, early childhood education? Because at the end of the day, we are supporting those who have the direct role of educating kids in the state of Delaware. Our role is to kind of step back from a quasi-policy kind of position and aid and assist them in that. So that's one man's opinion who will now be quiet until the motion to adjourn.
I love the idea. First of all, please continue to speak up. I love the idea of us having in our five priorities the concrete goals. This is what we want to see. And then these are sort of what you said, that the actions that we're going to take to get there. I just think spelling it out very clearly, and then also, holding ourselves accountable to, if we want to see early literacy, what are we going to do, and what are we going to hold ourselves publicly accountable to drive change? So that's sort of my 30,000 foot. I want us to have goals and measurables to hold ourselves in, so the public can hold us accountable to them. And that can take a number of different forms.
Yes, it's one of the things too. We get our budget regularly, and when I used to do strategic planning in the past with some of our local affiliates when I was with the SEA, I'd always look at their budget to see where are they putting their money, and I'd say, "Well, you've told me these are your priorities in your strategic plan, but I see it nowhere in your budget." So, yeah, if we're serious about this, it's got to have a place in how we operate. And that's what I'm hoping to, that a facilitator could come in and help us get there.
So does it make sense to move this forward for folks to maybe go back, take some time between now and the next meeting to think through what are those specific deliverables to Mara's point that we want to see in this plan, a plan look like, and come to the next meeting and we can figure out a way to then, whether it's going out to bid or if we go back and say, oh gosh, this one actually has it, but figuring out how to, at the next meeting, make some progress in some way, whether it is going out to a new consultant with a new proposal or what.
All right, I guess that would be my question. Are we locked into those are the three options that we have? I know that I don't want to say we whittled it down, but I don't know the process that I remember. But are we open to, if in fact we go back and review and we're like, well, maybe they don't give us what we need, or do we have the ability to say, then let's look elsewhere and
Happy to think yes. So I guess our next steps, we'll go back and each kind of look through it and make sure, if these do say enough, then we can potentially vote at the next meeting. And if not, come with here are the things we want to see in a new, I don't know if it's an RFP or whatever we put out. Okay. All right. Anything else from anyone?
I guess I want to go on the record and say this. We're in a spot where now, if there's an emergency with the four of us, we no longer have a quorum in a specific meeting. And I understand the hardship in filling these roles. As you are aware, in our previous roles, I helped to select, I was on the process of trying to find recommendations. We're three empty seats, and this is no way a criticism of our current governor. I just think that moving forward with slightly above half of our board is for me reminiscent of when you have a school that has constant turnover, you're constantly doing professional development on the same thing because there's so many new people. And so I just want us to say, I just want to say on record that doing that process and then bringing in new people who were a part of that process, that can cause us to be on a treadmill again. So again, my comment's not meant to be critical because I understand how hard it is to find the right people for these seats, especially given the criteria that must be met. But I think it's vital for, like, we're going to try to move this forward, and then we're going to bring in half a new team.
Well, I think that'll become very glaring with things like Reddit. I mean, whenever they drop their proposal off here and our 90-day clock begins, there could be somebody who is sitting at the table being sworn to make that decision who actually just joined the board. Now, that can happen at any time, right? I mean, the then governor who nominated me said this could be coming. In your term on the board, we believe it will. And here we are 2 years later, and it hasn't, but at some point it's coming. So I don't, part of that we can control, part of that we can't. It comes with the job, but I do agree. And I think everyone up and down the food chain, including our governor, understands the gravity of what we do. And I hope that. I'm almost assured that that work has to be happening now to fill the vacancies that are on the State Board of Education.
Yeah, I do know they are working too.
No, again, that's why I don't question that part either. And again, having been part of the I'm gonna say search team in my previous role, I understand it, but it's still alarming to think that some very important decisions could come before this board that's not complete, and it's concerning for me.
I'll say what Mr. Simmons is not saying. I have him to blame for me, in part for me sitting here.
Well, listen, I made one mistake.
We are grateful that you are here.
I thought I was out there.
And get it done quickly.
Yeah.
Because seriously, I am unavailable in April. And so I would hope that at least one position is filled by April.
Well, even think about the level of dissent that could take place, right? Like we have four voting members. One of us dissents, and now that's on pause, right? And so the impact of a singular vote is much higher now.
I mean, Harvey's seat has been open for well over a year. Reverend Powell's seat was open for over 6 months.
May 15th, 2025.
I mean, I don't know how to take that, whether people just are not interested or.
I don't know. And again, I'll speak from my experience with working with our former governor and trying to fill seats. You know, the criteria is limiting. And so that handicaps all of our governors who end up having to fill
Absolutely.
those seats. So that handicaps them. So then when you find somebody that meets the criteria, then is it the availability, right? And then, you know, and then things change, right? Like lifestyles change and you get an abrupt someone who has to leave abruptly, then now you're starting that all over again, right? And so again, my comments certainly were not to be critical, understanding the dexterity that you have to move with
That's it.
in trying to fill these positions. It's really hard. It's compounded that we got some very big issues coming to this board that's not filled. That was the point of mine.
Yeah,
Point
understood.
one.
And I would just sort of punctuate it with no, I had the good fortune like you to work for governors. I had the good fortune to work for the past two, and I know both of them take this board and putting good folks on boards very serious. So I just want to kind of assuage everyone that this is something that both Governor Meyer and Governor Carney take a lot
100%.
of take a lot of time in making sure that they are appointing
Sure.
the right folks.
Awesome.
All right. All right, moving on to item six, the Secretary's report. Secretary Martin, thank you for joining us. It is time for you.
Thank you very much, President Sheehan. I'm going to just give a personal point of privilege here to let you all know why I appear to be in a car, because I am. My mother in San Diego fell last Friday and had to have emergency surgery over the weekend. She is doing fine, but I needed to get her to an appointment. So my mother is joining me from the car. I just picked her up from her appointment, but she knew that I would turn the camera to her, but I don't think she wants me to do that. But she's right here. And she knows that this is an important state board meeting and is very used to me doing this kind of work. So thank you for the grace in allowing me to be virtual and to still join. I've listened to the whole meeting and appreciate all of your deliberations and the work that you're doing. You have my written report already, but I'd like to also just verbally tell it to you more in a narrative format, hoping that you have been had a chance to read it. I was going to start with the where our plan starts is the early childhood, but just since the conversation you just had, I wanted to mention that earlier this week I shared the department's 2025-2028 strategic plan. I did that with the Department of Education at our all hands meeting, which was all nearly 300 staff. That plan is our North Star. It's in the report that I gave you, but it's grounded in our five clear building blocks: measurable outcomes and shared accountability across the state, the districts, the schools, educators, families, communities. That's what a strategic plan does. That's what you were all just talking about. And embedded in that strategic plan is our early literacy plan, because literacy is not like one initiative. Okay, now we're working on this. It's a through line. And I just look forward to releasing the plan publicly next week and then being able to engage all of you more deeply in the months ahead around the department's 2025-2028 strategic plan. So you can see our key areas, the metrics, your time, your people, your money. When those are aligned and you can name your North Stars and you name the metrics as you go, then you begin to have everybody working together. So I mentioned it in the report. And I wanted to make sure I said it out loud, and it directly aligns to the conversation that you just had. I'll go back to where our strategic plan starts, early childhood. In his State of the State in the FY27 budget, Governor Meyer made clear that early learning is not optional. It's foundational. That was really clear. And so his announcement of the historic investments, nearly $50 million in state and federal funding, is an important signal and moment so that we understand that there's a shared commitment that every Delaware child deserves access to affordable, high quality early care and education. And this preschool development grant that we were able to secure is what is helping us strengthen the governance, the financing, and also the data systems that are necessary to build a strong, coherent early education system so that families are the actual people that we're serving can experience early learning as a system that actually works, not a maze that they have to navigate. So that's what Strong Start or Bright Beginnings actually looks like. And it's directly tied to then later in our plan, literacy, graduation, life outcomes. Then on the funding front, the Public Education Funding Commission, you should know, and you got a great report from our student board member, that it continues to do the hard technical work of modernizing how we're funding schools in Delaware. And the work is on track to deliver phase one recommendations for this new hybrid funding formula in April 2026, with implementation in August of 2027. Some of the components, like the equalization changes and the tiered funding for multilingual learners that we're hearing a lot of good public feedback on, that is continuing to work as we move forward with the implementation. These components really matter. Also, components around students in concentrated poverty, which we've talked about at the state board level. All of those require additional research, and then we need this legislative alignment to move into phase two. It's very deliberate work. We know how much it matters, and we know fair opportunities for every child begins with how we fund public education. That's built into the strategic plan that you'll see me talking about in the days and weeks ahead. Then last month, you've all mentioned it, I joined the Community Education Town Hall with Representative Kim Williams and Mike Smith, alongside all of the district and community members that were there. The conversation was wide, and I love public engagement in public education. It ranged from literacy to funding, from assessment to school climate, cell phone policy, educator recruitment, retention, like all the things we care about. But what stood out to me was not like one any single issue. It was how interconnected they all are, because our systems don't improve in silos. Progress requires us to be aligned. So that's important to me. We're starting to see outcomes to Christina school districts, Albert Jones, just some of the distinguished schools that are moving forward. That matters. Getting alignment across all of these recognitions around growth, around performance, and around progress with special populations so we can recognize schools matters. But we have to have ways of talking about it collectively. So when I step back, what I see is we are having bright beginnings by expanding early education. We're building safe and supportive schools that attend to student well-being and grow and retain our educators. We're strengthening teaching and learning, especially in literacy, so outcomes improve and are visible and known across the state. And college and career pathways are real, reachable, and we can track what they're doing for our schools and our communities. And then we're advancing our fair opportunities through the funding reform and the responsible use of technology and AI to drive results. And we're deepening, while we do it, we deepen our partnerships with our families and our communities because students do best when we all move together. That's the work, that's the direction, and that's what the department's committed to delivering on behalf of Delaware students. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Secretary Martin. Questions from the board? All right. Thank you very much. Sending all our best to you out west.
Thank you. My mother says thank you too.
All right. We're on to agenda item 7, formal public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for general public comment. Ms. Smith, is there anyone signed up for public comment?
Yes, we had two commenters sign up, and we'll start first with Kendall Massett. So, Kendall, I will ask you to unmute, and then we'll start your 3 minutes. I'll just promote her to panelist. Okay. There you are, Kendall.
Hi, sorry about that. Thank you. Good evening, Kendall Massett, Executive Director for the Delaware Charter Schools Network. I'm very sorry I'm not there in person. Traffic was awful. And so that I could be able to hear everything, I got home so I could be a part of this and hear your meeting. I wanted to start with saying something I said at the Charter School Accountability Committee hearing. Being an authorizer is hard. And the recommendation that was voted on Tuesday was not come to lightly. You still have time in the record. And when it gets to you in March, whatever your decision is, it will be hard. But know that we know that. So welcome, President Sheehan. You don't know this, but I try to bring information over about our schools. You are the authorizer for 22 of our 24 schools. So I just want to give you some really great news. Tomorrow, if any of you are available between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. and you would like some puppy love, Providence Creek Academy is doing a kissing booth to help raise money for Operation Paws for Homes. This is the charity that they have chosen to raise money for this year, and so far have already raised $18,000. And their goal is $35,000. But they're not just raising money, they're also having animals adopted. Studies show that animals that are shared on Facebook are more likely to be adopted. Of the 14 dogs that they have shared out on Facebook, 7 have already been adopted. So they are making an impact. And tomorrow, the Laverne and Shirley show will be there at the puppies. So for those of you old enough to remember Laverne and Shirley, yes, it's Laverne, Shirley, Squiggy, and Lenny will be there. Those are the puppies in attendance. But what they're also learning is analytics and data analysis and how they can make an impact on social media. And so here's my ask of all of you. If you could please go to the Providence Creek Academy Facebook page. And when they share out an animal, a dog, on their Facebook page, if you could please share that out, because these kids are actually tracking that and they're learning how things on social media can translate into things going viral. They're learning it for the good things, but they're also recognizing it can happen in a bad way too. But I know you all are animal lovers just like me, so please go help share the dogs out and get them adopted. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kendall.
We did have another person sign up to provide comment, but she has since left the meeting. So perhaps I will email her back. If she's got something in writing to submit, then I'll share that out and post it with all of you.
Sounds good. All right. Our next regular meeting is on March 19th. Is there a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting?
Written, so move.
Motion by Dr. Griffin. Is there a second?
7 seconds.
Second by Mr. Simmons. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. It is 6:25 p.m. and the meeting is adjourned.
What would happen if I voted against that event already?